Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here. Today, we're joined by Courtney King. She's a Senior Vice President of People and Culture at Beatbox Beverages. Courtney built the People and Culture function from the ground up, scaling the company from fewer than 40 employees to over 270 during a period of rapid hypergrowth. These are the companies we really specialize in, and I found Courtney and was really curious about her. She's passionate about showing how culture fuels business, not just engagement, and has pioneered strategies that keep employees connected while the business grows at lightning speed. Courtney also does speaking and advising and sharing her insights on building culture that scales really without losing its soul. So Courtney, thank you so much for being here. And what do you want to add? Who are you? What is Beatbox? Give us a little bit of a background, if you will.
Gosh, okay. I can certainly tell you about Beatbox. I think you covered it. Thank you for the introduction. That was a wonderful introduction. But Beatbox is an RTD, or ready to drink party punch. Beatbox was founded by three wonderful individuals as a grad school project, actually. And they founded this company under the premise of like bringing people together and their love for music. You know, I have so much to say about Beatbox, but that's probably my like very quick 5 minute or 5 second overview. And I can certainly tell you more throughout this interview.
Amazing. And you all are growing, which is fun to watch and to see and to just kind of cheer for you from the sides. But you've talked in prior conversations about scaling culture without losing your soul. So what does that really mean in practice? Like, how are you growing? How do you do this without losing your soul, especially during hypergrowth? We know companies are vulnerable to like low cohesion. Things get really messed up as people are kind of onboarding, and you've done this really well. So I'd love to learn more.
Sure. You know, I'm going to start by saying nothing is perfect, but I can certainly share with you, you know, what we've done in practice and what we've observed that has worked well. And, you know, something I love about Beatbox is there's not a fear of failure. Like, we have the ability to innovate. And so if something isn't working, we iterate on it until we get it as close to right as possible. And so for me, the challenge on like scaling without losing that soul is building people systems that drive results, but that are also human. And I think that's where a lot of companies miss the mark, is they see people as a cog in the wheel or a number. And you have to remember that employees are all beautifully different and have different, you know, fears, and they have different abilities and a multitude of other things. So you have to keep those things in mind. So we also treat employees like you would treat a customer, because I always tell employees there is no us, meaning the people and culture department, without them. And some of the ways that like I see that in a practical standpoint is, we have our sales and marketing teams that are really doing their best to provide an outstanding customer service experience for our external customer. And we strive to do the same for our employees. Like a customer, we know that an employee can choose to work anywhere. And so we really want to do our best and show up for them every day. So I think that, you know, I'm frequently asked about, all these things are great, but like, what is the return on that investment? And I see the return on that investment through things like our voluntary turnover last quarter was less than 2%.
Whoa, that is incredible.
Yeah, I've been with organizations where the goal was 30%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our engagement scores, we do an engagement survey every year, but our engagement scores are in the mid-90s. And even as we've grown, I think there was a percentage point different this year. I think it was 95 versus 96 last year.
Well, that's really high.
Yeah. And so that is my return on the investment for the things that we're doing. People are staying, so we don't have that high cost of turnover, and people are doing the best of the work of their career while they're here.
I love it. So my mind goes to a couple of things, because there's so, I think what you do intuitively is like for us on the, on like, as we're researching this, like what are the variables that really drive, like what is the human side, right? Like what are the things? So I'm just thinking about things like, you know, open communication, building a culture where people can speak freely, psychological safety, which is, you know, just being able to speak up, belonging, all of those things. And then you're really talking about the business impact, right? So retention, engagement, profitability. Yeah. So what are the biggest impact of doing the things that you've noticed? Like, is it's retention, engagement, like what else? Anything else?
Well, I mean, I think that people are coming to work happy every day, and they're talking about it. Like, they don't have the Sunday scaries. Mm-hmm. And the business results represent that in a way that I have never seen in my 20 plus year career. Mm-hmm. So as we have talked about, when I started, we had less than 40 employees. We have 270 plus today. And our revenue, so while I don't want to speak to like particular numbers, but I can tell you that we do more revenue in a month than we were doing the entire year when I first started. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those are representative, that people care about this business. They're willing to go the extra mile. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have, you know, maybe been on Slack or doing something at 6 or 6:30 at night, and there is a multitude of people still working. I know, myself included, organizations where people don't feel like the business cares about them, or that they're, again, just a number. They're kind of clocking in at 8 and they're leaving at 5, and you're not going to get anything else from them. People work on vacation, not that it's expected, but what I'm saying is that most people, they're checking in because they want to make sure that the business is doing well. Again, not because they're expected. And so, you know, I gave you kind of the tangible ways or the tangible things that you can measure with a number, but I'm seeing all of these other human behaviors that represent happiness at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Work becomes a vehicle that's bringing kind of joy and energy, it sounds like. And I was just thinking, like, certain industries are like, at least when we work at different companies, like some, there are certain companies that's easy to just really get behind, right? So if you're, I don't know what, saving children across the globe or something, right? That you're like, God, I'm, you know, and then, but your company is a product, it's a drink, right? And yeah. You're seeing there's a high level of commitment and purpose and excitement. So there's something you're doing around communicating what you're doing, right? That gets people excited and engaged, that I think is different or unique than other companies.
Well, one thing I thought about off the top of my head is, like, we bring fun to work. Like, we have a fun score. We measure fun. Mm,
interesting. So tell me more about this. Yeah, I want to hear about this in a practical way. And so the fun score, amazing. Tell me what that is.
Yeah. So every year, mm-hmm. in the beginning of the year, we bring all employees together here in Austin, where we're headquartered.
Love Austin.
And we do a
I said, I love Austin, and I'll be there in October. I have to remember to reach out to you.
Yes, please do. I'd love to see you in person instead of just on the screen. Yeah. So we do this cultural summit for employees, and my department plans it. Well, with the help of an event planner now. We used to do it without, and that event is designed to set the tone for the year, but it's not just another boring, like, let's get in a room and, you know, talk about sales figures and, you know, everybody's eyes are rolling to the back of their heads. It's really an event for our people to build relationships, deepen connections, you know, have experiences as a team. And our co-founders made a point this year to talk about really wanting to make sure that people are having fun at work and doing the best work of their career. And Well, you can't track what you don't measure. And so we decided that we would start measuring fun. And I must tell you that that was a little bit of a difficult animal to wrap my hands around at first, because I was like, fun is different for everyone.
Yeah. How do you operationalize it? How do you ask about it? Right.
Well, so I had all of these ideas, right? And they were rather complicated, even down to we surveyed employees and said, like, what is fun for you? And I tried to create KPIs out of that. And I just realized, I was like, that is too complicated. Mm-hmm. So what we ultimately did is ask employees, are you having fun at work? Mm-hmm. And then we would, the idea would be, we would have a baseline, and then we would measure that every quarter. And if it goes down significantly, then, you know, we're going to dig into it as to, you know, what's going on. And maybe there's a legitimate reason. I mean, I will say that I do believe employees have fun at work. And if you can't have fun at beatbox, I don't know where you can have fun. However, there are times that may be busier or less fun. And so I think it's also just knowing what those might be.
Yeah. And knowing, I'm thinking, like, we do, at least on groups world, we take these snapshots of like where teams are in moments, really as a reflection of the connection and cohesion. And what we always say to our partners is that, like, we're not saying we're like creating these outcomes, whether they're good or bad, right? If there's a dip in connection or cohesion, we're not really saying that it's something we do, but it's really important to know when people feel disconnected, because now you can understand, you can look at the larger factors that are happening and say, like, what needs to be addressed. Like, as an example, I remember with an organization, we had some like dip in numbers, and we're like, oh God, like, this doesn't look good for us. Like, why do they feel like, you know, their retention had gone down a little, their feelings of connection had gone down sort of midway through the program. And then it really begged the question, like, why? But two senior leaders had left, right? And so, of course, when senior leaders leave this team, people are going to be thinking, should I go? Is like, it's a time of transition. I feel a little bit less connected to the people that are here right now, is really connected to those leaders. And then it allowed us to have a conversation around, like, how are you doing? What do you need here to make this like a really good environment? And I imagine for you, like, it's probably similar with fun. If you're getting feedback that it's not fun right now, or someone's, it could be like life's hard for them in other ways. Maybe there's something going on at work. Maybe it's one project, but it at least gives you an indicator of something to explore together that you can actually solve for.
No doubt. Absolutely. And like I kind of mentioned earlier, if you have the data, at least you can figure out, you know, kind of work your way into what the problem or the solution is, whether, you know, instead of just maybe trying to guess at it.
Yeah. And I think just the act of being curious builds that connection and belonging too. Like, people want to feel seen and heard. So if someone's signaling that they're not having fun and nobody says anything, or, you know, but just say, hey, like, what's going on? I noticed you're, you know, maybe in like, aren't enjoying things as much as you usually do. Like, help me understand. I'm just, you know, kind of curious about it. That experience is where like connection and cohesions build, which then is that stickiness, that which is the engagement and the retention and all of that, you know, just having the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, like, I think how powerful it is to work for somewhere where you have someone that, first of all, notices a change in you, totally, and then ask you about it, right? And so I found that some of when we were smaller, now as we have gotten larger, I have a team and I'm not as involved, but I knew everyone by name. I knew about their, you know, their situation, whether it be, you know, where they lived, are they married, what they loved, what their passions were, their hobbies. And like I said, it's become a natural progression that I maybe don't have that level of detail anymore, but I have extensions of myself and I have team members that, while I think there's a lot of diversity on my team that I'm proud of, one thing that we all have in common is we absolutely care about the employees and care about their experience. We're curious people. I noticed you said that, and I really liked that, because I am naturally so very curious, maybe even to a fault. I think sometimes people are like, my gosh, why do you keep asking so many questions? And I say, like, I assure you, it's not you. It's just me. I'm curious. I want to know why. I'm going to dig. So I think just caring about people is one principle that, you know, it doesn't cost money. And quite frankly, it doesn't take a lot of time. But it's also a trend that I have seen do, you know, 180 in the last 10 years. When I first started my career in human resources, you know, it was very much like, you don't let people see who you are. Like, there is a work persona and there is a home persona, and especially and specifically in HR. It's like, you can be pleasant to these people, but they don't even need to know what, you know, flavor of soft drink you love or ice cream or that you have a pet, much less know who you are as a human being. And I am so happy to see that those trends have done an about face and that we're now sharing who we are as people with our teams, just like we want them to share with us.
Yeah, I remember that too. And that's still the case in psychology in a lot of ways, but there's a loosening of this, I think, for a whole bunch of different reasons. But I'm just thinking, like, I remember when I was just starting out getting my doctorate and I like had a little office. I was working at Bentley University, which is like a business school up here in Boston, in the counseling center. And I wasn't sure if I should, like, it was either a picture of, I think it was a picture of like my husband or something. I can't remember, my partner at that time. And it was like a long conversation with my supervisor. Like, do you have the picture out or not? And that it was on my desk, which was like tucked away. And I was sort of like, well, what is that? What's the impact of that? If someone sees that, and then you're sharing these parts of yourself. And I think now it's just being thoughtful about, it's not right or wrong. It's just like, what's the impact? What parts of yourself do you want to show, you know, that is helps you be human, be real, be authentic? And what parts, and then where is it, like, when is it going to get in the way or make someone feel like uncomfortable or something, you know, like break connection or cohesion? But especially in the virtual world, like,
else do you have?
Yeah. Like, my daughter could walk in my office at any moment right now. Right. And be like, hey mom, as we're doing a podcast, and that's it. Right. Like, she just, there's not a hard line between personal and professional anymore. Like there used to be.
Right. And, you know, I kind of think about, like, when we're looking to deepen that connection at work, and especially in a virtual environment, leading with vulnerability is something that at least I have found works particularly well. Mm-hmm. And that can be a variety of things. So to your point, that can be, you know, people knowing your partner's name. I know all of my people's partner's name. They know mine. Again, we share pictures. We have a Slack channel. But it's also saying, like, if I don't know something, say, I don't know. Like, I may be the head of this department, but I don't know the answer. I will find out, though, from that curious nature. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I find that when I make a mistake and I tell my team, like, that didn't go well. You know, I'm not feeling good about that, or I'm not particularly proud of it, but I am going to fix it. I think that leading with vulnerability also helps employees. It helps build trust, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're a human being just like they are. You have a family, you make mistakes, you have wins. But I am so glad that trend has changed, because I must tell you, it was incredibly hard for me to have two kind of personas. You know, I'm always someone, like, my friends and family know me as very straightforward. I mean, maybe even to a fault. But so it was very hard for me to kind of maintain those two personas. And I think that also, like, seeing someone saying, yeah, like, I've been there. In fact, like, if an employee is experiencing a family dynamic issue or a life issue or a health issue, if I've been there, I'm going to share that and say, like, this happened to me. And if they want to know how I dealt with it, I'm happy to tell them. But, you know, there's that line between, like, you don't want to force your opinions on anybody, employees or friends or family.
Yeah. So really, like, using kind of shared experiences to connect and be honest and using yourself. Yeah. In, like, you know, in psychology world, we often talk about like the use of self-disclosure. So it, like, we spend so much time thinking about like, when do you share, how do you share, for what purpose? And then when we're working with leaders, always thinking about same kind of like thing. It's like, yeah, for what purpose are we sharing? Like, am I coming in to offload my, you know, frustrations with my in-laws or something just because I want a sounding board? Or is that going to actually help me deepen connection and build a relationship with my team because they see me more as human? You know, yeah,
that's a fine line, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. How do you actually, if we go down and follow that thread a little bit, how do you make that distinction in your mind? You know, like, how do you know what's inbounds and how do you know what's out of bounds?
I don't think I can give you criteria other than you mentioned something earlier. Like, I'd never want to, you know, make anyone uncomfortable first and foremost. But other than that, like, I think it is very individualized. Like, what works for one person may not work for the next. And I pride myself on being someone who, you know, tries to be very in tune to what employees' emotions are. I'm not perfect. I miss sometimes, but, you know, I can generally read that. And I would tell you that's what I try to do. And some people you can form a, if you want to call it a bond or a connection that's a little deeper than others, you certainly can. And that's okay. I think it's individualized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really, like, it sounds like kind of reading the room, paying attention to the dynamics, and then getting curious and asking yourself, like, is this going to help build the relationship or potentially make the person uncomfortable in some way, which is kind of.
Sure. And I think normalizing some things too, like I also try to find, like, what is that thread, right? Like that kind of interweaves some or most of us together. And I think that's kind of a way to start. And then you can figure out, is this a relationship where I need to go deeper or I can go deeper? Or is this where we at? Is this effective? Is this good? You know, is this a safe place to be?
Yeah, I love that. So it's like, it's almost like negotiating that social contract. I'm just thinking, you know, our COO at Groups is like, we're so close. She's been in this with me since like the very earliest days, was the first person I brought on, and just has been someone I really rely on, and just amazing human being. And our styles are quite different. Like, you know, just the way we approach the world, our values are the same, but our kind of like dispositions are a little bit different. And I remember when we first started working together, we really had to talk about, like, you know, what works best here? Because I can be very much an open book, fast moving, all the things. And she's, you know, more, and she was also coming from a military background where I think like trust is more built versus like given. And I'm more of like, trust anybody until like someone like proves me wrong. So figuring out like, what does that feel like? What do we both need here to feel good in this like working relationship? You know, and both styles can really benefit the company, but we just have to figure out and like talk about like how we want to work together.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a good point on the trust piece. Like, trust is one of those threads too. And at least in my experience. So
yeah, one of those core things. Mm-hmm.
I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that I trust absolutely everyone until you give me a reason not to, but I wouldn't say I'm militant with it, right? Like, I don't know. And that you have employees that have differing experiences of who they can trust and how they can trust. And I think that informs as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember sitting at a table with my team, and we were, I don't even remember what led to this conversation, but I was like, okay, if you have had trauma from a work experience or a work trauma, like, raise your hand. And all of us raised our hand, everyone at the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, yeah, we think about, like, I'm just thinking at work, where we're relational beings, right? We're social beings. So we get hurt by people. We get hurt by experiences. We get hurt by teams. We get hurt by groups. And by hurt, there can be big hurts. There can be little hurts. But all of us have had, you know, things that have left like either little wounds or bigger wounds, just depending on your experience, right? And those experiences shape how we show up at work. So if I'm starting a new job and I've got screwed over by my prior leader or past team or whatever, like I'm going to come in with a heightened guard. And no one often talks about those things. So now we're just trying to like feel our way through them, being like, why is this person opening up? Or why this person's unavailable or disengaged?
Because or what is their motivation even? Like if you've had that prior work trauma, and myself included, somebody's doing something, it may even be nice. It's like, why are they doing that?
Yeah, because we all have in every single interaction, like where we have a thought, we have a feeling, and we have a behavior. So like if we just bring it here, like here, you know, my thought that's not conscious is like, I like Courtney. Courtney's easy to talk to. This is going, that's happening somewhere in my brain. Because if I was having a thought that Courtney's unavailable or disengaged or I'm making her uncomfortable, I'm going to have a different feeling, right? Sure. But I have a feeling of comfort and openness because somewhere in my brain, I'm thinking Courtney's a nice person. So my behavior is being open and communicative and whatever. But if my thought was different, my feeling would be different. I'd be more guarded or stressed. And then my behavior is going to be different, which means I'm going to be more shut down. I'm going to share less or talk less openly. But that's happening for all of us at all moments, like at work, at the grocery store, in our relationships. It's just the way humans operate in the world.
Say that again. It's thought, something, and behavior. What was it?
Thoughts, feelings, and behavior. So think about the way I think about it is in every environment, like we show up. And so we're always scanning the environment, whether it's conscious or not, because if we're not paying attention, we're vulnerable. And as human beings, we're wired to survive. We need to protect ourselves. So we're always scanning the environment. So we have these, it's, you know, if I'm using psychobabble language, it's cognitive appraisals. It's a thinking thing. Am I safe here? Do I belong? Those are just happening in some fundamental way at all moments, because if I'm not safe and I don't belong, I'm at risk and my survival's threatened. That can mean like being in a dangerous neighborhood in a new city. It can mean being at work and feeling like you're not, you don't belong there, right? Or like you're not accepted or you're at risk.
No doubt. I mean, to your point, I just wanted to write that down.
Yeah, that's feelings and behaviors. So you have a thought and then a feeling that follows the thought. You can't will away the feeling. The feeling's in response to the thought. And the behavior, what we see, is often driven by the feeling. If I feel stressed, you're going to see it in my behaviors. If I feel calm, you're going to see it in how I show up. If I feel whatever. And that behavior often reinforces the thought or challenges it. It's like a little cycle. Yeah.
Would you say of those, I think the behavior is the one we can most control, right? Like the thoughts are the thoughts and your feelings as well. But the behaviors,
the things we have room to play with are thoughts and behaviors. So like if you feelings are feelings, those are an outcome basically. But if I have a feeling, if I have a thought, like say you were, I don't know what, looking away this entire time, right? Mm-hmm. My thought could be like, Courtney's not into this, right? Which then I'm like, this isn't going well. I feel stressed. Or I could change my thought and challenge myself to say, you know what? Courtney's, you know, notes are on the side. That's a different thought than the first one that's going to change how I feel. You know what I mean? So you want to challenge your thoughts. So the signal is when you have like, when you're angry or you're upset or you have an emotional response that's like you don't like, basically that's like a 7, 8, or 9 out of a 10, you want to look at your thoughts and challenge it and be like, what am I thinking here and how true is this? So, and then what can I, how can I change my thought to see if I feel differently?
That's, like I said, I wrote the exercise down. Like it's no pun intended, but like, I think it's very thought provoking. And so this is something that I may even explore with my team a little bit.
Oh yeah. So in our, so I can help, we can talk offline, but and give you some frameworks. Like
I would love that.
Our leadership program is helping leaders look at their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and then how they're mapped against their business goals. And then what thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are getting in the way of deepening connection, cohesion on their teams. And then once they kind of have that mapped out, then we teach them coaching skills to be able to coach their people. So I have lots of ideas and prompts I can just send you and happy to, you know, give you information. But it's good for personal reflection. It's good for understanding others. It's good to be like, what's getting in my way here and what's supporting me here too? What do I do well? What thoughts do I have that are actually super conducive to this environment? You know what I mean?
I do. And mine is one of them generally is like, I wonder why that is, like that curiosity.
I was going to say curiosity, you've said a couple of times. So you have a thought, which is more of a question. Like, I'm curious. You see a behavior and then you're curious about it, which is very much a coaching mentality. So instead of seeing it as an absolute, you're getting curious about it, which opens up conversation rather than shutting it down. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Yeah.
Which is like a super skill. Like, many people see a behavior in someone else, and then we make assumption about their why, which actually is very limiting. But for you, you get curious about it. And so teaching other leaders to do that is like a fantastic way to get more information about what's truly happening on your team.
Okay. Well, you know? Thank you. I think that's accurate to your point. Now, of course, nothing is perfect or without fault. There are times where I've, you know, make an assumption about someone from like a previous interaction or whatever. But for the most part, I generally am asking myself why, right? Like, that's interesting. I wonder why this, that, or this. And it does lead me to have a lot of flexible opinions about people. You know, sometimes, meaning it can be changed. Like you said, if you can kind of change that.
Yeah. It's cognitive flexibility. You're like with questions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're like so good. You're so good at this. It seems I can just like hear it in your.
Okay.
You know?
Well, thank you. I mean, I again, generally try to be, I try not to assume intent or even a why. Like, anyhow, I would say I'm generally pretty flexible. Yes.
Yeah. You're making me think of that. Like, there's the, that image, I can't remember, but it's like that, like iceberg, you know, with a little tip above the water.
Yes.
And all we can see is each other's behaviors, but we don't understand that what we don't know is what people are thinking, feeling, their motivations, their past experiences. All we see is the behavior. And so to understand the behavior more, we have to ask questions. But a lot of us feel uncomfortable asking questions. So how do you help leaders and teams ask good questions?
I think it only takes one, right? Like it starts with the first one. And that's going to help to guide, like, is this person open to this? Is this helping this person or is it helping me? Or are they closed off to this, right? Because that has always been my line here at work is like, I just never want to make anyone uncomfortable. And so wherever I want to, when I get that signal, that's when I want to stop. But I have no problem asking questions of people and answering questions that people have. Like, I think that has to be a two-way street for sure.
Yeah. Signaling that it goes two ways, that this is a real, like, you know what I always say too, and I actually, it's funny because I didn't say it when we just chatted before, but I often say this when we, I'm like kicking off a podcast with someone, is like, if I ever ask a question or say anything that potentially makes you feel uncomfortable, I'm not anticipating that. But if I ever do, it's okay to tell me you don't want to answer it. So just like putting that on the table, because I know I'm a curious person too, and I'm a psychologist, so I ask a bunch of questions. So sometimes I can go like, maybe deeper than might feel comfortable for people. So I just tell people like, tell me no, it's okay. You know,
to your point, like, it's funny you say that. I do that as well. I sometimes ask questions and I'm like, you know, I'm very curious about this, but you absolutely don't have to answer. And 9 times out of 10, people are going to answer. But yes, I absolutely understand that. And, you know, as we get to know each other, like, I am someone, if I didn't want to answer something, I would simply tell you that. But there's not much.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty open. And I think that's what makes me relatable to people.
Yeah. Because you're sharing your story, and the way we understand each other is through storytelling and exchange, you know? And so it sounds like, yeah, I feel like you and I just could keep going with this, you know? I'm like,
Good.
We're
yes.
just getting, and we're already like, you know, five past over what my editor guy always wants me to stop. Okay,
well, to your point, let's dive back in or get back on whatever track we need to. But yes, this is very interesting.
Oh, no, there's no track to be on. I just appreciate the conversation. And I'm just, as I feel like we should probably get ready to wrap up. And I feel like there's a lot of themes around, starting just what I heard you say is that you've been with, your company from the early days before 40 until kind of where you are now, which is over 270. And you've built this really strong culture rooted in fun, and there's high engagement and lots of excitement. And then I think through our conversation, we're kind of unpacking how'd you do that? That's very aspirational. And I think where I can just see it in you, it's through question asking and curiosity and care, but also boundaries, having limits, saying I ask questions, but also it's okay to say no, or there are parameters here. Or even when you're talking about people logging in during vacation, it was very clear. You're that's never the expectation, but it's a sign that people are engaged,
Yeah, absolutely. And when I come into an organization, and specifically here at Beatbox, that's exactly what I do. My first order of business is not necessarily about the business. I need to build rapport with people, because without the rapport, nobody's going to help me learn about the business. And without the relationships, all the other stuff falls flat. And so my first order of business is at least simultaneous with learning the business, if not before that, is I have to build rapport with people. And you don't build rapport with people by just talking about yourself. You ask about them, you learn about them, you find a commonality. But to your point, you have to do that in bite-sized chunks with most people, because most people coming in don't want a new person, whether at work or at home or in whatever relationship, asking them a bunch of questions. It just feels a bit off-putting for most people initially. It's gradual. You don't build a relationship in one conversation, except for those rare times when you do.
Yeah, totally. You're making me think questions, the way you ask questions and the tone and all your nonverbals really matter. So it doesn't feel like you're investigating versus connecting. And And it's in psychology, but this is very leadership-y stuff too, is I remember training, I used to train psychologists when they first were getting into the therapy world. And when we train our leaders, it's the same thing. It's when you have open connection, open communication, that's information. Those are variables that allow you as a leader to do your job better, or you as a psychologist to help someone. But no one's going to come back or share with you if you don't build the relationship. Right? You've lost before you started if you don't invest in building the relationship. So don't try to do anything until the relationship's there. It's the unlock to all the business stuff that's there.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head 1,000%.
Well, Courtney, it's just so fun to chat with you, and I just appreciate you taking time with me. And anything that I didn't ask you that you would want to share that, you didn't have the chance, because I took you down all these different rabbit holes that were really fun. But anything on your mind that you want to share? No pressure though either.
Well, as I was thinking about this podcast, and I think what I'm about to say, all things are related. Often I am asked about what have you learned? And I guess I can say a few things, and you do with these things what you wish, if you find a soundbite or something meaningful. But so as I'm looking at my notes, I'm not making quite eye contact, but
I've got you paranoid. You're actually very eye contacty. Just top of mind.
So it's less about perfection, right? So it's more about the trust that we just talked about. It's about your timing and knowing what matters most or what's important. So that's one thing to remember. It's if you're striving for perfection, it's never going to happen and you're never going to get there. So I just want to normalize that 80% is okay in 80% of things. Mm-hmm. I'm looking through these notes and it's okay, I told you we've grown exponentially with people and revenue and success, but we didn't scale by copying what other people's do, what other companies do. I'm sorry, other people and companies. We listened. So whether it be we listened to our customers, we listened to the market, we listened to our wholesale partners, and we listened to our employees. And so we designed systems that could grow with us and not weigh us down. So we can be very nimble. And then we talked about like radical candor and treat people well, treat them like customers, see them, and then lead with your heart without losing sight of results. And then I made the note to myself, like, what is broken, and maybe, I guess, broken in general. And I noted that anything you build for optics instead of impact, that's definitely, you know, it's not going to work. It's going to be broken. So what if it doesn't have all the bells and whistles, or it's not as fancy, but like, is it making an impact on people? Is it working? And then, you know, hyper growth reveals everything, right? And so you see the magic, but you see the cracks. And so that real culture, and if you can build something with intention, such as with my people and culture department, I want people to feel seen, heard, taken care of. And if you can build it with intention, you can build something that is truly lasting.
I love it. You have so many gems. Learning. I have so many gems, and I just, you know, just appreciate you taking time with me today. And I just look forward to, you know, getting to know you more. And I'll see you hopefully when I get to Austin, and it's like the beginning of October. So I'll let you know.
Okay. I'm around. I have a trip like the 9th through the 12th, but I would truly love to spend some time with you. Like maybe we could go eat lunch or something.
Yeah, it would be great. Courtney, thank you so much for spending time. You're just an incredible leader, and thanks for all the work you do.
You're most welcome. This was a lot of fun and very interesting. Thanks for having me.
Of course.